Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
See the shots that I took? Wet like I'm booked.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked on Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter. Producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Now, this Suns game. Rockets did win 115-109, but it was a lot closer than you would have hoped it would have been. You know, you come out, they kind of started things off slow a little bit that first quarter, put themselves in down eight, so 31-23 at the end of the first, but then they punched their way back in the game in dominant fashion with that second quarter. 37-21 second quarter. Overall, kind of get yourself back into it. And then you kind of let up off the gas a bit in the third, which this Rockets team is known for doing. And then you're in it in the fourth. You're going back and forth with Phoenix. And then thank goodness that James Harden hit the turbo nuclear button, because you needed that from this team, from the stretches where just offensively shots weren't going in. And suddenly James just did his superstar thing, turned it on, and carried the team in that fourth quarter. But he wasn't the only guy who was carrying the team. Russell Westbrook had a really great all-around game. He was efficient. He was getting rebounds. He was dishing the ball well. He had what could be arguably his best game as a Rocket. The three games that come to mind are the New Orleans road game, the Miami Heat home game, and now this game, as far as his best games as a Rocket. Westbrook finished with 24 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Only had 4 turnovers. I'm happy with that number from him. He was 1 of 3 from the 3-point line, although he only took the third 3-pointer near the tail end of the game after it looked like they were kind of putting things away a bit. So really, he was more so 1 of 2. The third 3 he took, he was absolutely disturbingly wide open, and he just kind of, it's one of those he had to take. 3 of 4 from the charity stripe, 10 of 18 overall. You kind of take that with Russell Westbrook, 10 of 18. Now, he hit all his shots inside the restricted area, he missed one shot inside the restricted area, and then he was a really pitiful 1 for 9 outside of the restricted area, which is not great. You just want to see him limit those shots. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. Harden had, you know, usual night in the book for himself, 34 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, a block. Just another day in the office for Harden. 15 of 18 at the charity stripe, 3 of 17 from behind the arc. He struggled through the first three quarters, and when Harden struggles, the Rockets' offense struggles. And we've been talking about it, but it's not great the amount that he is ISOing to start some of these games, especially when he just doesn't have his shot. He had kind of a Westbrook night, 8 of 27 overall. Still put in 34 points, and his true shooting percentage, although I don't have it open right in front of me, probably doesn't suffer that much simply because of the 15 of 18 free throw shooting. But you got to expect more from Harden. He is a very consistent superstar. He doesn't usually have this many games where he struggles as mightily as he has from behind the arc, and so you kind of expect him to regress to his mean, but you also really want to expect more out of him, in the sense that when he doesn't have it, there's got to be a cap where he decides, okay, let me look to start getting my teammates involved a little bit more, drive a little bit more, and kick the ball out. Because he had Ben McLemore, who was tearing it up, Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker, who was actually not great, but maybe just needed a few more looks to kind of get into the rhythm of it. Didn't hit a single three all night for PJ. But at some point, You know, he hit those two threes in the fourth quarter because he had that stretch where, again, he hit the go-go button, scored something like 15 points in a row for the Rockets, but I want to say like 18 in the fourth. And that's great. And he hit two of his three threes in that quarter, but that means he was 1 of 15 at one point from behind the arc. And I understand his mentality. I understand that all great players, and especially all great shooters, tend to share the same mentality of they're just going to keep shooting. They're not going to worry about how many shots they've missed. And Kobe has that really great quote where it's like, if you look at the box score and you had a 1-for-9 shooting night, it means you beat yourself because you gave up on yourself mentally. Whereas if you have a 1-for-20 shooting night, then at least you didn't give up on yourself. You kept trying. Now, I know that Kobe is maybe not quite as polarizing as James Harden is in today's NBA, but he was polarizing in his own right. So maybe some people agree with that. Maybe others don't. But I get where Harden's coming from with the continuing to shoot, and it worked out in the Rockets' favor in this game. They were able to separate themselves a bit in the fourth thanks to Harden's push pretty much all by himself for a stretch there, because even though it was 18 points overall in the fourth that he scored, I want to say it was 15 in a row. Yeah, I think it was 15 in a row that he scored by himself, and no other Rockets were contributing for a small stretch there. So James Harden doing James Harden things. Mentioned him already briefly, but Ben McLemore, 27 points, had a couple boards, had a steal, not much else in the way of stats, but 27 points on 5 of 9 three-point shooting, 10 of 15 overall. So he wasn't just getting threes up this game. He was getting a monotony of shots. Monotony? That's not the right word. Anyways, he was getting a number of shots up. We'll go with that. We'll dumb down the vocabulary for a minute because this is a very early Monday morning podcast. And so did go to the free throw line a couple times, but Ben has been critical. These last two games against Toronto and now the Phoenix Suns, he is shooting 50% from the three-point line. It's like 13 of 26. Ben has been critical. This is his first game off the bench where he's actually produced well. And there were people pointing out his very strange starting versus bench splits. And honestly, I didn't put much weight into those, mainly because there wasn't a large enough sample size to prove anything. But if you can do something as a starter, or if you can do something as a bench player, you can do it in the opposite role as well. There is a mental aspect to the game that is slightly different when you're coming off the bench, but overall, it's still playing basketball. It's still going out there and hitting shots, playing defense, doing all the things that they expect Ben McLemore to do. We'll keep breaking down this game and some of the other concerns, because it was a win, but there are some concerns there in just a moment. But first, a quick message from Spotify. Now, I know some of you guys have already been doing this, taking screenshots of the Spotify Wrapped for the year and tagging both Ben and myself, which, hey, I appreciate being in those tags. I've only been here for 2 months, but I appreciate that you guys are giving me a little bit of credit for the 2 months that I've been doing this podcast. So again, if you're a Spotify listener, if you want to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year, just take a screenshot, tag us at Locked On Live, as well as the show at Locked On Rockets, and myself at JT Gallen, and you can continue throwing Ben in there at Ben Dubose. He did the podcast for the other 10 months of the year. I've been doing it for the last two. So tag us all on there on Twitter, and we will share and retweet it. So it's the time of year when everyone is traveling or running around getting thoughtful gifts for the people that they care about. How about you think about giving yourself the gift of an Audible membership? Now is the best time to do it with a special offer of 53% off of your first 3 months. Access an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, thrillers, memoirs, and more. You can choose 3 titles every month, 1 audiobook, and 2 exclusive Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. Listen on any device, anytime, anywhere with the Audible app. It's great while commuting, at the gym, or during your holiday travels. Right now, for a limited time, you can get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's more than half off the regular price. Give yourself the gift of listening. For more, go to audible.com/lockedonrockets. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, I spoke earlier in segment one about the concerns that I have for this game, but I want to highlight first something that made me extremely happy about this game. And we still have to wait and see him do this against actually good teams The Suns are in the playoff picture technically right now, but they also have a losing record. And so they are not one of the upper teams or top tier teams in the league. And we've seen Westbrook struggle against many of those teams, except for the Miami Heat game here in Houston. Against every other team, he's had relatively not great games. And so it remains to be seen if he can have this type of superstar Russell Westbrook triple-double game against a good team. But at the tail end of this game, as the Suns were making their push to try and get back into things, Devin Booker makes a pair of free throws, cuts the lead 104-97. There's 3 minutes left in the game. Anything can happen. We saw this happen with the Spurs game. And so there were kind of flashes from that game occurring where you're thinking, okay, are they getting ready to blow this lead? Is this what's happening? Are the Rockets going to go ice cold? Russell Westbrook, at 2 minutes and 51 seconds left in the game, makes a driving layup to push the lead to 106-97, and he gets fouled, so it's an and one. Makes his free throw, 107-97. Then you get Ben McLemore, who makes a two-point shot with a Westbrook assist. Suns come back down. Saric makes a three. Booker makes another pull-up, and now suddenly we're looking at 109-104 after another layup by Saric with a Ricky Rubio assist on it. So that's kind of the play-by-play down the line. And so you're at 104-109. You're still up, but you're only up by five. Westbrook comes back down, makes another layup, pushes the lead 111-104. Rubio comes back down, two-point shot, cuts the lead back to five again. And then Westbrook comes back down again, makes a layup, and gets fouled. Makes the and-one free throw. So Westbrook was playing to his strengths at the end of this game. And it may not be as pretty or feel as comfortable, in my opinion, as a Chris Paul mid-range jumper. But if Westbrook can just simply get out of his own head and realize that the way he needs to play is going to the rim. Now, again, we're not going to expect him to drive to the rack every single play, every possession of every game until the end of time. You just can't expect that from him. He's human. He can't do that. And one thing that we may take for granted is the fact that James Harden is built like a tank. James Harden is built like a tank and is one of the most durable superstars in the league, knock on wood. Westbrook just isn't built the same way. Westbrook is a lot lighter than James. He's still a peak physical specimen, but he isn't built the same way James Harden is, and maybe it's a little bit harder for him to continually take the contact driving to the rim, or maybe his knee just isn't quite right and he doesn't quite have as much of the explosiveness as he would want to have. And then lastly, something to take into consideration is the fact that because he was rehabbing all summer, he didn't get to actually work out the way that he normally does every summer. And for a guy like Westbrook, who is in such peak physical condition, maybe that's throwing him off his game just a little bit. I'm not trying to find excuses for Russell Westbrook, but overall, for a guy that can literally get to the rim at will, it's strange to me that he doesn't do it more often. And so I like to think that there's some underlying reasons as to why we haven't seen it as consistently as we all would hope to this point in the season. But overall, at the end of this game, three separate drives, three separate makes, hit both of his free throws in a crunch time situation. He was the Westbrook that we got flashes of earlier this season. In some of those, at the end of the Bucks game is the very first one we saw. That game, even though they lost, that game was a preview as to what this relationship with James Harden and Russell Westbrook on the court as a pair of Houston Rockets could look like, where James just simply didn't have it. Now, James found it in the fourth quarter of this game, but Westbrook was the one who kind of sealed the deal down the line. Now, James had a couple more free throws further down the line. James wasn't completely MIA down the stretch. It's not that he just ghosted, but Westbrook was doing his version of the Chris Paul safety net type dance. And it felt pretty good, honestly. It felt good to see Westbrook take the ball and, in a way, take the game over. He drove it to the rim three separate occasions, made three shots. I mean, what more can you want from this guy? And as a team player, he was getting everybody involved. He was wheeling and dealing. He finished with 11 assists. He could have easily had 16 or 17 if the Rockets didn't miss as many shots as they did. As a team, I mean, they shot 27.5% from behind the arc. And you still won this game. The Suns shot better than you from outside the arc, and you still won. I mean, 27.5 is not great to shoot. 11 of 40. The Rockets even hit a few more of those, and you're looking at a true blowout instead of the game being as close as it was down the stretch. And now a big chunk of that was James Harden. 3 of 17 from James is not pretty to look at, but you also had 1 of 4 from Rivers. Cephalosha missed the only 3 that he attempted. Westbrook 1 of 3. House only hit 1 of 2, but he didn't shoot a lot this game, and that was one of my concerns. P.J. Tucker 0 of 4. That's not going to continue. P.J. Tucker is one of the most, if not the most, consistent shooter on the team. So his 0-4, I'm not super worried about. But at least the guys who were struggling to hit shots were finding ways to impact the game in other ways. P.J. finished with 9 rebounds. He had a block, he had a steal. Daniel House Jr. had a relatively empty stat line. He did have 3 assists, and we've spoken about this before, about his ability to be the secondary facilitator in lineups with James Harden or Russell Westbrook or both of them. So great to see that from him. As always, playing great defense. And really, because James was taking so many shots, there weren't that many shots to go around for those guys. But you want to see Daniel House clear at least 8 3-point attempts a game. There's no reason for him to be sitting at 2 3-point attempts. And same thing for P.J. Tucker, in all honesty. Even though in this game he went 0 for 4, I'd really like to see P.J. and Daniel House continue to get roughly 8 to 10 3-point attempts a game, because they're your 2 best shooters. They're better and more consistent from behind the arc than James Harden is, because their shots tend to be wide open. They tend to be corner shots, at least from P.J. And James has to actually work for his shots, and he has to put in, you know, the ISO, create the separation, and then get the shot up. Whereas those guys, they tend to be shooting those shots wide open. The funny thing is, as I say all that, Daniel House, the 1-3 that he did hit, he hit off the dribble, kind of mimicking the James Harden step back in this game. So as I said all that about them usually being wide open and not having to work as hard for their shots, the 1-3 between House and Tucker that they did hit last night, 1-for-6 between the two of them, Daniel House hit it on the move. So I'm kind of contradicting myself there. But usually those two guys are wide open when they're shooting those shots, because it happens off of the initial action created by James Harden or Russell Westbrook. So we'll keep talking here in just a moment, so don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Now, as far as the concerns that I'm taking away from this game, there's 2 main ones. The defense at times did not look superb. And I'm talking about all the times that Ricky Rubio or Booker or Kelly Oubre would just glide in for an easy lay-in. I'm talking no contest. And those situations just simply can't happen. Those are defensive breakdowns. I know that Rubio did it a couple of times in transition where nobody picked up the primary ball handler. And that's just defensive miscommunication. That's them not trying to the best of their ability to actually secure or shut down the defensive possession. Now, one thing that, if you guys notice, P.J. Tucker, and again, highest IQ defender on the team, now that Chris Paul is gone, best defender on the team by a mile, P.J. Tucker, when he is on the opposite end of the court as the transition, or as the break starts for the opposing team, what he'll do is, if he's near whoever the ball handler is, he'll cut them off right away. That may or may not be his man, but what he does is he just throws a quick body into them to stop the break. Just pay attention. Next time you see PJ getting ready to defend in transition, if he's near the primary ball handler, even if it's not his man, he will just throw a quick body into them and then turn around and hustle back to his guy, because that by itself slows down the break. And that's all that needs to happen. Somebody has to pick up the primary ball handler in transition. And a lot of the issues behind that are James Harden and Russell Westbrook tend to be the guys who have to be on the primary ball handlers. And because of that, when one of those guys winds up shooting the ball, which, let's face it, a lot of times it's James, they're not picking up their guys in transition. And that's not great. Having to rely on the rest of your team to kind of cover your misgivings in transition is not a great look. And this team, we know this team isn't a defensive-minded team. We know that they're not going to be a top 10 defensive team. I will happily eat crow if they somehow make it into the top 10. But I don't see them breaking into that range. I see them in the 10 to 15 range pretty consistently. And
at the end of the day, you have to at least limit the opportunities that you can that are easy to limit. And thinking about now, the Suns were only credited for 9 fast break points in this game, but it didn't feel that they only had 9. It felt like they got out pretty consistently and just got down the floor. And so maybe they get down the floor and they don't score within the, you know, arbitrary window to claim it as a fast break point. But there were plenty of times that they just beat the Rockets down the court. They got into their sets, they got into their actions too quickly, and the Rockets could not get their half-court defense set, which led to easy points for the Suns. That's kind of why they got back into this game. And give the Suns some credit. Again, they may be an under 500 team, but they are still a playoff team in the stacked Western Conference. They had a hot start to the year. They've had some unfortunate losses here and there, but you play them again during this 10-game stretch. You play them when you go on the West Coast swing out there. You play the Suns, you play the Clippers in LA, I want to say, the Kings. I don't have the schedule right in front. Actually, yes, I do. Let's go back to the schedule. There it is. So you go on the West Coast swing a little bit later on, where you play the Clippers first, then you play the Suns, then you play Sacramento, and then Golden State as part of this 10-game stretch where the Rockets really should clean up shop and pick up. I'm expecting 9-1 through this stretch. Really, the only team that I see giving them some trouble are the Clippers. And since you still don't have Mr. Zone Buster Eric Gordon back quite just yet, I do expect the Clippers to still implement the hardcore double-team James Harden strategy. Wow, I almost said James Harden. James Harden. Could you guys imagine if I did the whole podcast like that? So James Harden. Can't do that. Anyways, so you got the West Coast swing coming up, and really the Clippers are the only team in there that I think is going to give you some trouble, but you face Phoenix again, and they put up a good fight in this game. So there's really no team that you can take for granted in the NBA, especially the Western Conference, where top to bottom, you look at the bottom of the West, you've got teams like New Orleans down there, but New Orleans has given you a run for your money in the 2 times that you faced them this season. First time at home was 126-123, and then on the road in New Orleans, 122-116. So you won both of those games, but they were really close. So really, top to bottom, you can't take any games for granted in the Western Conference. Now, my second concern, and I mentioned this briefly earlier while we were talking about the shooting percentages for the team, was Daniel House did not get a lot of opportunities this game. And by association, we're just going to kind of extend this a little bit more towards PJ Tucker as well. James Harden, for as great as he is, when he just doesn't have it, I would like to see him mitigate his shooting just a little bit, just kind of scale it back in just a bit, and try to get others involved. He finished with 4 assists on the night. We know that James Harden on any given evening can go for 10-plus assists. And so in a game where he had Ben McLemore, who was lighting it up, Daniel House, who was getting very few attempts, PJ Tucker, who was 0 for 4, but I'd be content with PJ shooting, again, 8 to 10 threes a game to try and get him just more reps. He's a good shooter. You know, maybe 5, 6, and 7 drop, and then we're talking about PJ being 3 of 7 instead of 0 of 4. He's that kind of shooter. He's consistent. And so, as far as Harden is concerned, going 3 for 17 from behind the arc is not an ideal way to win games. That's part of the reason the game was as close as it was. And for all those misses, all those 3-point misses that you're racking up, 29 misses on the evening, so 11 of 40, you're giving the Suns opportunities to get the rebound, get out in transition, and attack a defense that isn't set. So I'd really like to see him scale back those 3-point shots. He only drove to the basket 10 times, or attempted shots inside the arc 10 times. I'd like to see him scale back those 3-point shots and actually look to get others involved, or look to just drive the ball in a bit more on the evenings where he's not tearing it up. And this was one of those. He went into the fourth quarter 1 of 15 or 1 of 14 from behind the arc. That's not great. That's a really bad evening. And had James not hit those 2 3-pointers in the fourth quarter to kind of give the Rockets some cushion, had he not had his little burst in the fourth quarter, and had the Suns come back and won this game, the national media would have had a field day with this game. Because if you look at the end of the game and James is 1 of 17 from downtown, had, you know, as many free throw attempts as he did 3-point attempts, the national media would have picked him apart.
And I don't personally like giving the national media ammunition to then come after James Harden and the Rockets. We already hear enough from them as is. And so I don't want James to go out there and do things that will lend themselves to the national media just coming out and bashing the Rockets. It's not a great look. Now, I know we could just tune them out and say we don't care, but at the end of the day, everybody watches national media. Everybody watches Skip. Everybody watches Stephen A. Like, everybody watches Max Kellerman. And so when you've got less in-the-know basketball fans, it just stokes the fire of the irrational hatred towards James Harden. So I'm not a big fan of giving them ammunition to work with. And by association, I think the Rockets would objectively be a little bit better if you transition some of those three-point attempts onto the other good shooters. There's no reason, again, for Daniel House to only have two three-point attempts throughout an entire game in a game where he played 30 minutes. So it's not like he wasn't on the court. PJ Tucker, again, 0-4, but I'd like to see him get way more than that. There's no reason not to. Shoot, Ben McLemore, 5-9. Ben McLemore could have stood to have a few more shot attempts, but he only played 30 minutes, so there are only so many shots to go around, but I think that James should have taken a bit more of a backseat, gotten his guys more involved in this game. Maybe he's just kind of over the double teaming that he's been facing. He was fresh off the Toronto game where he really essentially didn't get to play in the game, so he just kind of wanted to have a game to himself where he could do his thing. Even though the Suns were doubling a little bit, not quite as aggressively as Toronto, but you come out with the win, 115-109. First win in this series of 10 games where you really should, again, go in, take care of business against all the teams you're supposed to take care of business against, and it puts you in a very prime position to be pushing for the 1 or 2 seed come the end of December when you get Eric Gordon back in the roster. I think for this early Monday morning podcast, that's where we'll leave things off for. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Of course, Ben is on there at Ben DuBose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website, lockedonrockets.com, and of course, our email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out and let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Monday, December 9th, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.